Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. We have a very special show for you today. With me is Coot Blackson, visionary, transformational teacher, and best-selling author who has been inspiring audiences all over the world to trust in the wisdom of their soul, take courageous action, and unlock their true gifts and greatness. And today we're going to be exploring Coot's newest book, The Magic of Surrender, Finding the Courage to Let Go. Welcome, Coot, to Voice Rising.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So it's good that you're here, and you are very passionate about transforming lives for the better. You do have the new book out there. We just mentioned it, The Magic of Surrender, Finding the Courage to Let Go. What inspired you to write this book?
Wow. Well, first, I would just have to acknowledge that this was not the book that I was planning to write. This mm-hmm. was not the book I intended to write. This was not even the book I wanted to write. I mm-hmm. had all sorts of ideas of the book I thought I should write, the book I wanted to write, the book I thought would be bestsellers, the book I thought the publishers would want, the book I thought my audience would want. And I remember one day I was brainstorming ideas, and I had an entire whiteboard on a wall, and I was throwing hundreds of ideas, you know, intelligent, creative ideas, manifestation and purpose and fun ideas. And none of those ideas really resonated. None of those ideas mm-hmm. I could honestly feel in my own integrity as true. And the only word that stood out for me was the word surrender. And so I resisted it for the first moment. Then I had to surrender to the book about surrender. And mm-hmm. so what really inspired that, because that triggered me to 4 years, about 4 or 5 years ago in 5 years ago now in 2016, the end of 2016, my mother was diagnosed with stomach cancer. And that mm-hmm. was a real shock to me. And I was on a high traveling the world, and life has a way of humbling you. And she was diagnosed with stomach cancer. So every month I was living in Los Angeles. Every month I began to fly back and forward from Los Angeles to London to be with her in her chemo sessions. And I had every intention of trying to heal my mother and get her well with alternative therapies. Shortly into this, a few months into this experience, I realized she was not going to make it. It was my sense. Mm-hmm. It was my observation. And about 6 months into this process, the doctors also said that get your affairs in order because you're not going to make it. And so you maybe have days, maybe weeks, maybe months. And up until that moment, what was amazing was I was forced to accept. I was forced to surrender. I was forced to let go. That letting go really led to something profound, because in that 6 month period leading up to that doctor's conversation, I got to be with my mother. I got to sit with her in chemo sessions. I got to hold her hand. I got to, you know, eat dinner with her. I got to wash dishes with her. All of the things that I had deemed as a waste of time became so special because it felt like this could be the last moment. This could be the last mm-hmm. cup of tea. This could be the last dinner. This could be the last time I hold her hand. This could be the last time I look in her eyes. And every moment became so profoundly sacred. And so what started off as the worst year of my life turned out to be the best year in a strange way. And when the doctor said that you're not going to make it, get your affairs in order, in the in the parking lot, I looked at my mother and I asked her two questions, and this is where I saw the seed of the book was planted. Number one, I asked her, are you afraid? And she said to me, you know, my mother's a little Japanese woman, and she said to me, "Kurt, I'm not afraid because I know that I'm not this body, and this body will die, but what I am is a soul, and the soul is eternal, and the soul will live forever." And then she looked at me, then I looked at her and I said, "Is there anything I can do for you to make your final days easier? Is there anything you want? Is there anything that you need?" And she looked at me and she said, "Something that forever changed my life." I didn't realize it in the moment, but this is the moment that the book was planted. She looked at me and she said, "No, there's nothing I want and there's nothing I need. The only thing I want and the only thing I need is what God wants for my life." And that hit me so deeply in that moment, because I realized that this entire year, she didn't cry. She was very emotional, but she didn't cry. She didn't complain. She didn't feel like a victim. She was in complete peace this entire time, truly, authentically. And I saw that she wasn't attached to living. She wasn't attached to dying. She was free. She was truly free and at peace. She was surrendered. And I think that was the inspiration for the Magic of Surrender book. And then I saw that, you know, surrender is the password to freedom. It's the most powerful thing that we can do. If you look at the great ones, whether it was Jesus, whether it was Buddha, whether it was Gandhi, whether it was Mother Teresa, whether it's Martin Luther King, whether it was Bruce Lee, whether it was Muhammad Ali, they all surrendered themselves to life, to the infinite intelligence, to their soul, to their deeper purpose. And in surrendering themselves, they transcended themselves. They went beyond their own human limitation and capacity to live and, shall we say, manifest their lives. And life began to use them and move through them and manifest through them. And so that's kind of how the book came about. We can talk about surrender some more and what it means if you want, but that's the initial inspiration.
Beautiful. Your mom was at deep peace when she passed, and you mentioned that a lot of people carry a lot of fear about death and dying. And yet we've been told also that surrender is passive, but what you were sharing in your book is that many people surrender when there's no more options, right? It's at the very end. But what you were suggesting, and I do agree, that if we surrender more and more to the moment and to this feeling that life is moving through us, that God is moving through us, that we can surrender while embarking on the journey. That it doesn't have to be the last thing we do when there are no other options. It can be a conscious intent that we're setting. How do we surrender to each day? How do we enjoy each moment? So share with us, how would you then define surrender? If it's not passive, you know, how would you define it?
Yeah, I think in our culture today, there are so many misconceptions on how we see and define surrender. That surrender is passive, that surrender is weak, that surrender means giving up, that surrender means waving the white flag, that surrender means, you know, you won't manifest your goals, dreams, or desires, that it's being a victim, that you'll be left behind, that you'll be taken advantage of, that you'll get less if you surrender. And really what I'm saying is, in true surrender, you get more. Like, what if you got more than you could even have imagined with your conscious, logical, personality, mind's capacity to manifest your life? And so surrender is a letting go of control, or I should say, the illusion that we're in control. Because I think if the last few years have shown us anything, the universe has shown us maybe as human beings, we're not as in control as we thought. And so control is the master addiction. And control is a pattern of the ego, which we can get into further at some point if you want. But control is a master addiction. And the ego's job is to control. The ego's job is to keep us safe. The ego's job is to prevent us from getting hurt again. The ego's job is to reinforce its existence. And so surrender is a letting go of control. The illusion of control. Surrender is when we stop trying to force life to fit our limited idea of how we think it should be, and manipulate life to fit our limited idea of how we think it should look. And we don't even realize, in forcing and pushing and manipulating things to be what they're not, we are limiting life. And so surrender is to take the limitations off of life. To take the limitations of life and be truly available, truly open, to truly allow. Surrender is when we give up this, let go of the idea of what we think we should be and the life we think we should be living so that we can be open, available, allow, let life lead us. And I think when we truly are available and open and we allow, then we can allow the authentic expression of what life is seeking to manifest, what life, the life that is seeking to unfold for us and through us and in us, and as us, we can allow that to be revealed. And quite often, it may not always be what we think it should be or what we think it's going to be from the limited perspective of our mind and our ego's limited perception. And so surrender is an opening. Surrender is living with an openness, living with a curiosity, living with that availability. Then we're not limiting life. Then I think we are truly available to the infinite possibilities. And that's when magic can happen. Yes, it's not a passive thing. And so just to clarify, it doesn't mean sitting around and doing nothing and just waiting for the inspiration to hit all the time. It is a willingness to actively feel, like to feel the most authentic expression of what is seeking to happen. And so in the old paradigm, which I call the ego-based model for creating life, and you can create successful life and manifest this way, but it will often be limited. We're conditioned and we're taught, even in many self-help books, to ask the question, what do I want? What do I want? What do I want? And we might get everything we thought we wanted, only to then realize that what we thought we wanted was just what we thought we wanted based on who we thought we were. And many of our goals can be projections of unmet needs from childhood. Like, if I can just get that body, get that car, get that house, get that thing, then I'm going to finally be worthy and and enough. The question in surrender that I'm inviting people to ask is, what is it that life is seeking to express through me? What is it that the universe is seeking to express through me? What is it that my soul is seeking to express? What is the deepest impulse and expression of life that is seeking to manifest and express? What is the deepest impulse that is seeking to manifest and express, and to be still and to feel that, to attune to that? Then we can align our personalities and our intentions and our feelings and our thoughts and our actions with what's true, with what's authentic, and then we go into action. Then we can give 100%, commit fully without being attached. And so surrender is living without the attachment, because sometimes we get so attached to what we think something should be that we're not open to another alternative. We're not open to another perspective of what life might be seeking to unfold.
Yeah, I heard something beautiful once talking about desire, because in a lot of spiritual traditions, desire is so, in German, it's the word verpönt. It's like to look down upon. And it was exactly this thing that desire is one of the most creative things that we can do. You know, to desire to merge, desire to melt, desire to expand, right? But the attachment to the object is what often gets us into trouble. And Kut, you've grown up in a lot of different places. I believe you were born in Ghana. You mentioned that your mother was from Japan. Your dad is from Ghana, but you also grew up in London, I believe. And what are your thoughts? It seems that there are a lot of people in this world that are not even dreaming of the, you know, five companies and cars. Is this a Western struggle? Because I know a lot of people in beautiful parts of the world, and you also mentioned some stories in the book of, you know, and I've also been to India, of, you know, the train comes when the train comes. Or, you know, I know a dear friend of mine who is a musician in Morocco, and he says, you know, Kara, we don't plan concerts in Morocco. We basically, somebody drops by with a drum and somebody else brings whatever, a shaker, and we just start singing and we just start being in that surrendered moment. So is this struggle that we have, a, you know, this generation of survivors where every single newspaper says how to optimize, how to be better, how to reach your goals, how to affirm, how to set the intents, something that a great majority of people in this world, maybe they don't struggle with that because they're just watching the sunrise and trying to get their food on the table. What's your experience from living in all these different parts of the world?
Yeah, I think I've been blessed to live in Africa and Japan and India a lot, and Asia and the U.S. And I don't think it's so much about either or. you know, because to me, there's nothing wrong with planning.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with, I just want to make clear that surrender doesn't mean not planning. Surrender is not an abdication of responsibility, so that we don't use surrender as, well, we'll just go with the flow. And so when you want to show up, I'll just show up whenever I show up and whenever the spirit hits me. Sometimes surrender requires a deep commitment. And that might mean you don't just follow your current whimsical mood, because you have a deeper commitment to your soul's decision, to your soul's calling. And so it might mean you don't just do what you feel like doing. Like, I'm sure that there were days where Mother Teresa didn't feel like waking up, and Mother Teresa didn't feel like showing up, and Martin Luther King didn't feel like being in a certain place, because he knew the dangers and the challenges of that, and he didn't feel like it. But there was a deeper commitment to the calling. And so surrender is the deeper commitment to your soul. It's the deeper commitment to what's true, which might mean planning the concert, which might mean showing up on time, which might mean, but the key is in the West, which is, I think, also what you're speaking to. In the West, we tend to get attached to a definition of success based on attainment, attached to the goals and achievement of the goals as the only metric of success. And that's the limitation. The attachment is the suffering, not the planning. Because when you're in alignment with your soul, and when you're truly true, when you're truly feeling what is most authentic, what is most true, what is most sincere, when you're in alignment with nature, then you can plan in alignment with nature rather than planning to make something that is not in alignment happen. And there's the difference, you know. And so, for instance, if a musician has a calling, you know, he may and wants to reach a lot of people because that's what he feels is a deep, you know, emergence and authentic expression of his soul. It might mean planning those concerts and selling those tickets and making those phone calls. But he's not just doing that just to do it, just to do it, just to do it. But because there's an authentic expression that is happening and he's in alignment. And so I think it's the attachment that is the root of suffering more than anything. But what is beautiful about, you know, a lot of the countries like in Africa or in India, there tends to be a less egoic attachment and way of living, because it's, you know, India, Asia, Thailand, Philippines, Africa is less of an individualistic, egoically reinforced culture than the West. And so I think there's pros and cons to both. What I will say, just to maybe also provide some framework for the conversation, is often what resists surrender is the ego. It's ego that resists surrender. Now, we're often taught in our culture, oh, ego is bad, ego is the enemy, get rid of ego, annihilate the ego, destroy the ego, transcend the ego, ego is evil. And I like to say, ego in and of itself isn't bad. It's just a vehicle that we use in this lifetime to function and navigate, the driving car that we use to function and navigate in this three-dimensional experience. So ego in and of itself is not bad. It's our relationship, kind of what we were speaking about earlier. It's a relationship with ego that is really the issue, not just ego itself. Because if you look at someone, let's say Dalai Lama, if you met Dalai Lama on the street and said, hey, Dalai Lama, and by the way, he may not plan, but his prime minister, his assistant, his marketing director, they're all making the plans around him that he needs to show up for. And so there is planning that happens. It's the relationship with him. So if we met Dalai Lama and we said, hey, Dalai Lama, how are you? He would turn around and wait, or he would turn around and acknowledge that we said something. That requires a level of ego. But it requires, without ego, he wouldn't be able to look around and say, yes, okay, hello. And so ego is not the issue. So ego, I think if we could just understand ego, because ego is often what gets attached and tries to force its will and control. As children, we're born free. If you look at a child is free. A child will jump on the table and sing and dance. It doesn't have so much ego. A little baby before its condition, a young child, you know, between certain ages of birth, you look into a child's eyes, the child is in touch with divine essence, with source, with beingness, pure consciousness. It's free-flowing. It falls down. It poops when it wants to poop. It gets up. It sings. It burps. It cries. It hits its head. It falls down. It gets up again. It's not sitting there stuck in and of itself. A child will sing and doesn't care how it sounds, whether it sounds like Barbra Streisand or Celine Dion or not. It's not conditioned what's right and what's wrong. A child will run naked on a table. It's not wondering, am I fat? It doesn't have the egoic self-consciousness. And so what happens where the egoic control pattern comes in is these little babies were born into a preset framework of conditioning. We meet our parents. Our parents are conditioned by their parents and their grandparents and their grandparents, and the list goes on. So now we're born into this preset framework of conditioning. And maybe there's trauma. Maybe dad is an alcoholic. Maybe, you know, mom and dad are fighting all the time. Maybe they were great people, but they didn't know how to meet our emotional needs. And so on some level, there was a level of dysfunction, a level of trauma, a level of pain. Two things happen. The first thing is, as children, we learn to shut down, disconnect, not feel the pain of what's going on around us. And so we suppress all of the unfelt feelings of pain that we learn to suppress, start building up layers and layers and layers and layers and layers, and our true light begins to be hidden underneath the unfelt, unprocessed layers of pain and guilt and hurt and anger that we've learned to suppress, and fear that we've learned to suppress. And we also learn to create, often unconsciously, a kind of defense mechanism strategy in order to not feel the pain of what's going on around us. Disconnect, shut down, erect walls in our heart to not feel the pain. We hold tightly to that way of being as a way to function, survive, and protect ourselves. It worked for us when we were five. We take that same holding pattern, that way of being we hold so tightly onto, to age 15, to age 20, to age 30, and all of a sudden it stops working for us as we get older. It works, but it limits us. And so that way of avoiding pain and holding on that we've learned to create to not feel the pain at age five, that we hold so tightly onto, is a form of control, has good intention, but it now is limiting. And we hold on to that way of being in order to never feel that pain again. So now we're 25 in a relationship, and we have this self-protective mechanism that we learned very young in order to never feel that pain again. So it becomes very hard to flow, very hard to open our heart, very hard to surrender, because, what do you mean surrender? Open up and surrender? But that might open me up to feeling helpless or feeling some of those feelings that I felt when I was five that I don't want to feel, which is why I created this egoic defense mechanism in the first place. And then as children, we learn a way of being to get love, validation, and approval. We contort ourselves again into a certain shape, betray parts of ourselves, develop roles, personas, and masks as a way to get love, validation, and approval. We become independent. We become funny. We become nice. We become the yes person. We become the caretaker. The list goes on. All the ways that we learn to become, the roles that we learn to play to get love, validation, approval from parents. So we now contort ourselves into a certain shape that we hold tightly onto, avoid pain, get love. And that gets reinforced by culture, society, parents, those around us, and we end up thinking, this is who I am. And the degree to which we hold on, the degree to which we are holding on tightly to that way of being is ego. The degree to which we're holding on is the degree to which we're not free, is the degree to which we're conditioned, is the degree to which we're not truly able to surrender and let go. Not out of bad intention, but out of function and survival. So many times our holding on and our resistance is a strategy to keep us safe from feeling the pain and a strategy to not feel that pain again. But there's good intention that is motivating. So if we can recognize, and we end up thinking this is what we are. So I think first, if we can recognize, this way of being that I am as a persona, as a person, as ego, is not me. This is not me. It's just a pattern that has been learned to function and survive. I'm not my ego. I'm not my personality. I'm not these thoughts. I'm not these feelings. So if we can be aware of that, that we are conditioned, start becoming conscious and aware of how our conditioning expresses, and then start becoming conscious and aware of some of the feelings that we've learned to suppress so that as we start becoming aware of these feelings, we can start finding healthy ways with some support to start feeling these feelings, to release these feelings, so that we can start loosening the grip of our own self-protective mechanisms again. And this is the self-protective holding that tends to prevent us from surrender and letting go.
We're talking about the magic of surrender. We're going to take a very short break and then be back with Coot Blackson to explore more. How can we relinquish control and feel more liberated?
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. With me in studio today is Coot Blackson, and we are talking about his newest book. It's entitled The Magic of Surrender. We were just talking a little bit about going beyond ego and understanding that whole mechanism. Coot, you were talking about the calling, about when we start tuning in to listening to our divine calling and not always necessarily following all the the strategies of what we think we should be or could be, but start tuning into our own inner voice. And if you think about those people, like you mentioned Jesus, you mentioned Mother Teresa, you talk about Malala in your book, Nelson Mandela, they were allowing the bigger vision. But as a voice expert, I always sense, and when you read their life stories, that they literally hear often a voice guiding them. They hear a calling. They understand that there's all these exterior voices of the belief systems and conditionings and mother's father, but deep down, there's this voice that is pulling us forward or that is guiding us. What is your experience with that? Do you have an inner voice that seems to guide you, or other, or maybe multiple voices, who knows, right? Many guides. How is that for you?
For me personally, I think I've always felt, if you want to call it a voice, but it's really been more of a feeling than anything. A feeling, a sensation, a very subtle kind of feeling that pulls. But it's not always like a loud siren bell, like turn left or turn right, but it's a very subtle feeling. And I think I've had to learn to become attuned to the subtle feeling dimension, the subtle feeling sensation that can feel like a gentle nudging or a gentle mm-hmm. whisper or a gentle guidance, you know? And mm-hmm. whenever I felt that, for instance, I felt that when I was young in my teens, the guiding to come to America, the nudging to mm-hmm. come to the U.S., it was a feeling that was beyond an emotion and wasn't a logical thing in my mind. And many times those feelings that I've gotten make no sense to my mind, make no sense to my logic. And I think we've all felt that. The challenge is we often start overanalyzing and overthinking, and that overanalyzing and overthinking is what ends up, we end up talking ourselves out of following that guidance. And so I tell people, you don't have to know where you're going in order to get to exactly where you need to be, but just acknowledge that feeling, because I found that for me, that feeling often arises from a deeper place than my conditioning. It often arises from a deeper place than personality. It arises from that unconditioned depth of being. And so whenever I follow that guidance, often I've had no idea where it's going to lead me, but it's never led me wrong. And so, for instance, when I felt guidance to come to America, I had no idea. My father had 300 churches. I was supposed to take over my father's churches. I was ordained as a minister at 14. I knew that wasn't right. I knew, again, the feeling like, something's not right. It was a feeling. When I was 18, I had the conversation with my father, which was very difficult. Then I had to figure out how I'm going to come to the U.S. without any money, without any support, without any family, without any connections. And I just had this feeling like there's going to be a way. I didn't know what. Next day, I said a prayer one day, and literally the next day, someone hands me a magazine called The Economist. I felt a strange feeling. I didn't know what, but I felt a feeling like, open this magazine, there's a reason. In the back of this magazine, this is just an example, it said mm-hmm. the American government is giving away 55,000 green cards in the green card lottery, the DV1 green card lottery. This was 20-some years ago, and I felt this feeling like I'm going to win, so enter it. As crazy as it sounds, long story short, I entered it, and I won a green card in the green card lottery. Mm-hmm. And so that, it, for me, my life has been a series of just following that feeling. And I think that's part of what surrender is. Surrender is kind of living in the opposite, where you allow, rather than pushing life, you're allowing life to lead you, allowing life to guide you, allowing life to show you. And as you start doing that, you start following life, start following the feeling, the clues of life, start following that feeling. And I think that's when we truly do that, because that feeling for me is not arising from the conditioned mind. The feeling and where it guides you to, the potential for manifestation is infinite, because it's arising from an infinite dimension of us. Call it our intuition, call it our intuitive capacity, which we all have. And so I would invite people to just follow that, to give up this need. One of the ways that the ego seeks to control is the need to know what everything means, to know and understand everything. Got to understand everything, because if I can understand everything, then I can be safe. If I can understand everything, I might not get hurt. And if I can understand everything, then it feels like I'm existing. And so the willingness to give up the need to know is really profound. Just follow the feeling. Follow the feeling. Yep.
It reminds me of the song, this look, look, look for the rainbow. Something like follow the feeling that, I can't remember the exact words, but there are people that really do struggle, though, with decisions, and they feel very torn. Yeah. And they feel also torn, even though they're not engaging their mind, they even feel that, let's say, they could have a wonderful time in Paris, because when they're in Paris, they feel just great. And at the same time, when they're in New York, they feel good in other ways. So what are some of the tools that you use? The more choices we have, the more decisions we need to make. What are some of the tools besides just sitting silently? And but if you think that you can go down three different paths and all of the paths are worthy.
Some tools. So first I will say we have to just acknowledge that there is a part of us deep down. There is a part of us deep down that knows everything. At the deepest level, we know. We know. Mm-hmm. And if we just like before I give the three like a few tools, maybe someone listening in, you've been in a relationship, a romantic relationship, and you're like, well, should I stay? Should I go? Is he the one? Is he the one? Should I, what should I do? You speak to your friends about it. You consult your, you know, astrologer, or psychic, whoever about it. You know, I'm still not sure. Should I stay? Should I go? And then you break up. When you finally made that decision to break up, many times I've had this experience. I would tell my friend, I knew that wasn't going to work. I would say, hey, Jeannie, I knew that wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. And they would ask, mm-hmm. where did you know? I just had the sense. So often it's not that we don't know. We're sometimes afraid to own that knowing because we're afraid of the consequences. And so we do know that even if we're not choosing, own that you know. There's a part of us that knows everything at the deepest level. We are everything. And so to make a decision, then I'll give a practice that people can do. To make a decision, number one, take time out of busyness and be still. Take time to be still and to listen. Many times we make decisions out of fear. When you make a decision out of fear, you will often create more chaos and more drama in life. Take time to be still and take time to listen. Sometimes we don't take time to be still and truly listen because we're afraid of what we might find. So that's the first thing. Create the spaces to listen. Your soul will speak to you. Then, in that listening, you're still not sure. You can ask yourself two questions. Number one, what decision do I feel is highest? What decision do I feel is highest for my soul? It's the highest good. What decision do I feel is highest? Second question is, what decision do I feel would evolve my soul and the soul of all concerned the most? What decision do I feel would evolve or serve the soul's evolution of everyone concerned the most? Now, you might say, well, I don't want to do this because, you know, Jim is going to be pissed off and upset. But if you ask the question, what would evolve Jim's and my soul and all of our souls the most? It might be really hard to make this decision, but I really feel in the deepest sense, decision A would evolve his soul, my soul, and everyone's soul the most. It may be difficult, it might be challenging, it might upset people, but I think this decision would evolve our souls the most. Go in that direction. Go in that mm-hmm. direction mm-hmm. Of what you feel would evolve the souls of all concerned the most. Thirdly, ask yourself, imagine your death. And on your deathbed, would you regret making that or would you not regret making that? Would you regret like, man, I really wish I went to Paris and I really wish I, mm-hmm. that for me, honestly, you know, there's so many places and things I wish I had done. And when mm-hmm. I look back, I think to myself, I should have done that. I really should have. And so if you really feel your death, because many times we don't do things out of fear. Many times we don't do things because we don't think we have enough time because we're prioritizing things that really aren't that important. But if you feel your death and go, wow, would I regret? Yeah, I would regret not doing that. I would regret not having that experience. I would regret, you know, cheating on my spouse. And so feel that. Feel what's inside. And then align. Use death as a way to align. And I think death often brings into reality, brings into focus what is really important for us. You know, there's many things that we put our lives on hold. We wait till some special moment in the future and we don't do what we're called to do because we think we have tomorrow and we don't. And so feel your death and ask yourself, would I regret it? Would I not regret it? One thing that I think would help people as a practice though, just to deepen in touch with their own inner knowing. I think one of the things that stops us from being truly free in life, free to make decisions, free to be ourselves, living free and fulfilled, are all the ways that we lie to ourselves. For the reasons I've shared in terms of conditioning and ego, as human beings, we often lie to ourselves about who we are, about what we want, about what we feel, about what we think our intuition is, about what's true. Out of fear, out of safety, out of comfort, out of self-preservation, we lie to ourselves. And so there is no true freedom. There is no true fulfillment. There is no true transformation without truth. So as a separate practice, I would invite people to ask themselves, number one, what lies am I telling myself? Often we don't tell ourselves the truth, which sometimes makes it hard to decide. We don't tell ourselves the truth because we're afraid of the consequences of what the truth might mean. For me, as a young boy, I was ordained at 14. I knew that wasn't right for me. I was too afraid to tell my father the truth because my fear was if I told my father the truth, then I'd be outcast. I'd lose his love. That was my fear. And so often we allow fear to hijack the acknowledgement of what we really feel and doing what we really feel called to do. And so we stay in relationships that we know aren't true. We work jobs and careers that we compromise ourselves as not in line with our truth. And so question number one is, what lies am I telling myself? What lies am I telling myself? Feel that we have to want the truth more than we want what we want. We have to want the truth more than we want what we have. Freedom isn't free. Freedom requires that we let go of what's not aligned. And we often hold on to what's not aligned out of fear and self-preservation. And so one thing I would invite people that would help, that often helps you get in touch with what's true, is let go of the pressure of having to take any action. Let go of any pressure of having to take any action. So that might mean, okay, acknowledging the truth, I'm no longer in love. I'm no longer in love with my partner. I'm not, whoa, that's scary, but I'm okay. You don't have to divorce. You don't have to just acknowledge the truth and let that marinate, feel what it does inside of you. I hate my job. Okay, you don't have to leave your job and get freaked out. And how am I going? No, just acknowledge. I hate my job. Feel that. Acknowledge that. Let that brew inside. Let that marinate inside. That begins a process. So what lies am I telling myself? What am I pretending to not know? And lastly, what are the lies that I'm telling myself? What is it costing me? What are the lies that I'm telling myself? What is it costing me? There is a cost. When we lie to ourselves, it is painful. When we lie to ourselves, it's meant to be painful. When we lie to ourselves, it doesn't feel good. It's not meant to feel good. To me, the fact it doesn't feel good, the pain is a signal that we're not in alignment. The pain that we feel is a signal that we're not living our truth. We're not making an authentic decision. And so that pain is feedback showing you where you're not in alignment. Use that pain to as a guidepost to bring you back into deeper truth. Doesn't mean your truth might not be scary, but it will feel more deeply correct in your being. And so often we feel the pain. Pain is not the issue. We feel the pain, but we distract ourselves from it. And that's what keeps us stuck, often from making a decision and living authentically. We feel pain, but we drink it away, we sex it away, we drug it away, we social media away, we shop it away, we work it away, just so that we can numb the pain and we don't have to feel the pain that keeps us stuck even more. What I'm saying is take the time to feel the pain. Not wallow in it, but to acknowledge and feel the pain. That pain is showing you that you are not living in alignment. And then course correct. Bring yourself back. Bring yourself back into alignment. And when you bring yourself back into alignment, not that it's easy, but it will feel right.
It will feel right. The soul lives in honesty, integrity. You're talking about the power of telling the truth to ourselves and being in alignment with our lives, which is powerful. Kut, you have a vision, I believe, for this world. You are passionately out there empowering people, asking them to take the time and to look into their lives. We've gone through 2 years of COVID, but it's not only COVID. I think the people are at a turning point. It seems like there's a very big shift happening where we have to not only ask ourselves if we're in alignment with our own lives and truths, but have to ask ourselves, looking at climate crisis or species extinction or a war, another war, what are we ready to, or how would we like to live our lives? And I think when you talked about, you know, the power of looking at our own deaths. There's also a practice that people used to do. I think it's a little bit harder now because I'm not sure if there are papers that are publishing obituaries, but I know people that used to read obituaries as a meditation practice, right? So they'd have their coffee or their tea and then say, what are those four lines? You know, Mr. Smith, you know, was a teacher and loved by his whatever family. Like, what are the lines that stay? What is the legacy that we want to be known for? Is it to be at peace with the world? Is it, you know, what are we giving back to, right? It's a powerful practice. So what would you like for our world, for our collective humanity and, you know, all the beings? What is your vision? What are you surrendering to? What is taking you beyond Coote Blackson and to a bigger spaciousness in the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an expression, an element of what I've been living much of my life, and that is a vision to inspire us to remember and reawaken to who and what we truly are and live in harmony with ourselves and live in harmony with nature. And that's really my vision, you know, in different ways, you know, books and seminars in different ways. But that's really for me the vision, to help people remember and awaken to their truth, the truth of their being, the truth of their souls, and surrender being one kind of avenue and pathway to that awakening, you know. And so when I look at the world, though, and look at the last few years, I am, even though it has been challenging for, I would say, everybody, I'm incredibly optimistic when I look at the world, because it's easy to look at the world and go, wow, what the hell is happening? The world's gone mad and so much is falling apart. But I actually feel it is, we're going through a crisis on planet Earth. You know, in Chinese, the word crisis is also opportunity, that there was an opportunity for something more than before that is seeking to be revealed and unfolded, and something more for us to see than before. And old systems are collapsing, and old ways of doing things are collapsing, and old economic models are collapsing, old financial systems are collapsing, old educational, you know, models are collapsing. And as these old systems collapse, it's giving birth to something new. And I think we are going through a phase transition and a quantum leap and a quantum shift in consciousness and in human evolution, perhaps of the likes that we've never seen. And I think we are all being initiated in the last few years into, we've been in a surrender seminar, and we're being initiated as a humanity into a new way of living, a new way of being that is much more in harmony with ourselves and in harmony with nature and in harmony with divine flow and harmony with life and harmony with innate intelligence. And I think that's part of the path. And in any healing process, if you look at any healing process, individual, even therapeutic process, when you start looking inside and going deep into your own psyche and shadow, you go deep inside and you start looking at some of the unconscious material that you have suppressed, pain, guilt, hurt, shame, et cetera, stuff that has been suppressed in the shadow. For true healing to happen, you have to truly bring what is in the unconscious and the shadow to the surface, to conscious awareness, to the light, in order to be looked at, embraced, healed, forgiven, released. And as a species, as a humanity, global humanity, maybe the last few years is part of the healing purification process on the planet, where all of the stuff that we have suppressed as a collective is now coming up for humanity as a whole to see and heal and be transformed, transmuted, released and purified, forgiven and cleared. And we're in the middle of that process of purification right now, and it's not always pretty, but I think it's necessary. You know, to me, the world that we see is a mirror manifestation of a projection of all of the collective consciousness of all of us combined. The world that we see, there is no world out there. The world out there is a reflection of all of our consciousness combined. And so for me, you know, part of what I do, part of my mission and vision is to help us all heal ourselves, because when we heal ourselves, what will be projected in the world will be a different projection, a different expression, a different mirror. And so I think if we all want to do our part for the healing of humanity, we We get to heal ourselves. We get to look at, where am I out of integrity? Don't just look at Donald Trump or Joe Biden or some mayor or leader out there. Let's look at ourselves. Where am I out of integrity? Where do I lie? Where am I not authentic? Mm-hmm. Let's not just look at Russia and Ukraine and wars on the planet, but let's look at where am I invading? Where am I dropping bombs? Where am I terrorizing myself? Where am I brutalizing myself? Where am I hating myself? Because until we heal that internal division, it will always be projected in the world, because the world is a manifestation of our consciousness. And so for me, my vision is to help humanity, help us all heal individually so that we can be the change and then affect change on the planet.
Exactly. Shifting harm to harmony. I think those are excellent words to understand the unity consciousness, this opportunity that we have in this moment. And right on. I mean, Cooch, right? If we can't find peace within ourselves and peace in our living rooms with our beloveds, then it's very hard to point the fingers at other world leaders that are living that out on bigger scales. So you invite us to surrender, to understand the magic of surrender to a bigger picture, but also to heal and to work with our tuning in to our truth and our integrity. I thank you so much for being with me today at Voice Rising. And for all of you out there, pick up the book, The Magic of Surrender. And let me make sure I get this right. Finding the Courage to Let Go. And may we all be in aligned with our true calling and what we came here to do. Thank you, Cooch, so much. Bye-bye.
And love.